when they rejoined Jesus and the woman at the well, they were surprised to see Jesus talking to this woman. They are telegraphing to her by their looks, and by their attitude, and by their actions. And she is not worthy of their time and attention. Jesus' approach to this woman was accommodating and accepting. The disciples were crude and prejudicial. Their attitudes and actions could have turned this woman off. Jesus hadn't interceded. So here's a clue. Talking to our unchurched neighbors about Christ. We have to see them as Jesus sees them. You with me? We have to learn to see the unchurched as our Lord sees them. People that He loves, people who need to be given a chance to hear the gospel. If God opens a door for us and brings us into contact with an unchurched neighbor who is ripe for conversion, we need to be very careful and very prayerful that we proceed in love and patience. We need to let our neighbors see that we're both seekers. And we hope that they'll join us in searching for the truth and getting at the answers to some of the deep questions they have about their own lives. So, with those simple thoughts in mind, we need to understand a few things. Number one, the unchurched are not anti-church. Most people are not negative, or as negative as we think, toward the church. Most people will welcome an invitation to church. The problem is, we are afraid to share our faith with the unchurched and invite them to church. We're afraid. We're too timid. Number two, there are 160 million unchurched people in America. And 77 million of these people are waiting for somebody to invite them to church. Problem. Why aren't we inviting them to church? 77 million people are sitting out there waiting for somebody to invite them to go to church, to get them off of stopping, to get them on going. 79% of these non-church people believe in God. They believe in the Bible. They believe in heaven and hell. Why are we so apologetic and defensive about our beliefs? Number four, the best time to talk to unchurched people is after a national or personal crisis. Following the attack on the World Trade Center and Katrina, people were suddenly conscious of their mortality and their humanness and their weakness. And the conversation was about you know, who are we, and have we lost our bearings, and where is God, and what is he thinking, what is he doing? You know, people were all of a sudden focused on spiritual things about their lives, about our country, and its position in the world, and where it was headed, and what's happened to us as Americans, you know. Robert knows Shakespeare. Chase, 17-year-old boy who just died the other day. Funeral was held Friday, this past Friday, from cancer, leukemia. 17 years old, handsome, athletic, great future, brilliant. Everybody loved him. Point, a crisis in the family. Now, in his case, his mom and dad, his brothers and sisters, you know, are Christians. But if they hadn't been, the door is open. You know, if we'll take advantage of it and step through the door in sympathy and in love and demonstrating a sense of caring and establishing a foundation on which maybe in time, you know, we could get back with this family and talk to them about spiritual things. We have to earn the right to talk to people about Christ. You know, the days of standing on some busy corner, you know, in a big metropolitan city in black clothes and black dresses and black shoes, and people walk by and we grab them by the front of their jacket or their shirt or their blouse, and we pull them up and say, "Do you know Jesus? Are you saved?" Those days are gone. And that never was an effective way to reach people for Christ. You know, it's just common sense, and it's being ourselves. We're not trying to be anybody else but ourselves. Trying to get in to talk to people who are not going to church, but who very possibly would accept an invitation. And sometimes it just starts right there. It's not a question of setting up, you know, a series of home Bible studies with five or six film strips or using the John Hurt or any other Bible correspondence course. It's just saying, hey, you know, you guys are up against it. You have suffered a terrible loss. And you're hurting inside. And probably what you could benefit from more than anything right now is a loving spiritual family. Why don't you come down to church some Sunday morning? You know, and let us as a congregation embrace you and share your grief. Be there for you, you know. What do you think they'd say if they were unchurched, but they're interested in spiritual things, and they're going through a crisis? Gee, you know, they're thinking in the back of my mind, maybe they're right. We haven't been to church in years. We're out here battling this thing by ourselves. A spiritual family would be a great blessing. All right. That's my question anyway. That's my question anytime.
What you're saying is the greatest, it's absolute truth.
Thank you.
But you know what?
What?
We're going to be in a mix of other religions. And I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. Yes, sir. We shouldn't. But we're going to be really interested.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you.
Yeah, because
is an easy answer to your question. It's a good question.
That's right.
It's a good question. If we've had some time with them to talk about the Bible and spiritual things, and they bring up, well, you know, my dead grandmother, you know, for 75 years went to the local, our church, our Baptist church, you know, she was involved in this church, and where, you know, what you're telling me is, you know, she's lost. No, I'm not telling you that. But let me ask you this question. If your grandmother knew what you know now, what do you think she would do? We're on neutral ground. We're studying the Bible. We're looking for answers. We're trying to worship God in spirit and truth. It's not a question of what's acceptable to us, but what's acceptable to Him. And we have been studying about, you know, we've been talking about Christ and what it involved in being saved. If your grandmother knew what you know right now from our talks together, what do you think her decision would be? Or if your 17-year-old son who died of cancer or who was accidentally killed, you know, so early in life, if he knew, what do you know? What would he do? And I'm not the judge, and you're not the judge. God is the judge. And
as a neutral ground, interested, we ask them to turn on John 5:22, we think, and read that where the only judge Father judges no man, but committed all the judgment on his son. Since he is made of judge,
right,
you and I don't have him. And we have none. He has none.
Right. But we're sitting there talking to these people. John 5:22. He doesn't come to you.
Asking them to come to that verse.
Well, but see, I don't know that verse off the top of my head. You do. If an average folk sit in a pew, that thing won't jump into their heads like that. But it's an honest answer. I am not the judge, and you're not the judge, and we're not in this business of judging grandmother or our sons. We're looking for the truth. And if they knew the truth that you now know, what would they do? Church people are nervous, but they are willing to talk about spiritual matters. Guess what? So are we. We're just as equally nervous about talking to people about spiritual things as these people are we're talking to. When are we going to stop letting our butterflies keep us from talking about Christ to the unchurched? 75% of the unchurched people believe the Bible is an inspired book. So why are we hesitant to talk to them about the Bible, when many of them would like to learn about the Bible? Become in the last 15, 20 years a multicultural country. Well, we started out that way, but we sort of matriculated into Americans, you know. But in the last 15, 20 years, we've had a massive influx of Orientals, Europeans, non-English speaking Latinos, and so forth. And a number of our churches in the last few years have discovered that one of the best ways to get these people on a neutral ground in the Bible is to teach them English by reading the Bible. And so this has become a really viable option in the last few years. A number of churches are conducting, not only here in this country, but abroad, working with people of a foreign international background. They want to learn to speak English as a second language. And so we say, well, let's take the book of Mark and go through it, you know, little by little. Talk about the words and the vocabulary and the meanings of them. And as you know, and of course you know, that, well, yeah, that's a great way to learn English, to learn the Bible. What, you know, through the Bible. And what happens as we're going through and teaching them English, you know, they suddenly get to a point in this reading in the Gospel of Mark. Well, hey, wait a minute. Who is this man, Jesus? What is this business about him dying on a cross, you know? What's he talking about? He says, I am the bread of life, you know, and I am the water of life, and whoever drinks of me, well, you know, what's going on here? You know, but now it's suddenly not just learning English, but he's trying to learn what's going on in the context of learning English. So, a lot of people who are unchurched in America today are not very efficient readers. They're graduating from high school with maybe a fifth or sixth grade reading level, or maybe even less. We have developed an electronic culture where all the information these people are receiving comes through their iPads, their telephones, their laptop computers, and the libraries are going out of business. People are not, you know, checking out books anymore. They're reading over their Kindle, you know, if they can read. So we're going to march in there with the King James translation. Twelfth century English vocabulary. They don't even understand third grade American English. So we've got three strikes against us to start with. So what are we going to do? There's got to be a better way. Take your laptop, and I'll take my laptop, and we're going to go to the Gospel of Mark. You know, and line by line, we'll go through this thing. You've got to meet them where they are. You've got to earn the right and the trust to be able to sit down and talk with them. But if you get to that point, and get past that point, then you've got to somehow or another, we've got to learn how to communicate with these people where they are, with what they have to work with. And not try to lay some artificial mechanical program on them that they may not be able to comprehend or reach, you see. Most unchurched people, listen to this, would rather talk to an ordinary Christian than a preacher about the Bible and religion. So when are we going to get over the notion that it's the preacher's job to do all the evangelizing? You know, the preacher walks in, he's got three strikes against him. Unless the preacher has learned that there's another role for him to play, besides dressed in a black suit and a white shirt and a black tie and black shoes. And we're going to sit down here today and talk about God. It ain't our work, brothers and sisters. Somehow or another, we have got to communicate to these folks that we're just ordinary folks, whether we're preachers or just ordinary members of the church. We've got to come to them on their level as just down-home people. And I tell people a lot of times when I have finally managed to earn the right and trust to sit down and talk with them, and they know I'm a preacher, I tell them, listen, I have been around the world 2 or 3 times. I've just about seen and done everything. I am not embarrassed by anything. I've heard it all, I've seen it all, and I've done it all, and I'm just like you. I put my pants on just like you do, and you don't have to call me brother this or brother that, or, you know, I'm just done. And I, you know, I try to get over that hurdle before I ever go anywhere else. And opening the Bible and talking to them, I got to know that I'm just like them, tell you. Yeah, there are all kinds of translations out there besides the King James translation. And one of the best things you can do if you manage to get into some unchurched person's home, and there's mom and dad and maybe a teenager, is to take with you about 4 copies of a translation that you're comfortable with. If it's an NIV or it's the New English, the New King James Version, or one of the modern translations out there, which Katie mentioned one of them, the New Century Version, that is crystal clear. From a person who read on a 6th or 8th grade level, the Bible just will come to life as they read it because it's written in the language they can understand. Katie. There's more than that, but the 40 some translators, about 12 of them were members of the Church of Christ, some of our own scholars in Hebrew and English and Greek. But they were trying to come up with a translation of the Old and New Testament that was easily to comprehend, you know, to the average American person. So, oh, yeah. Yes, ma'am. Very true. New Century Version, NCV. You go online and find them. Sometimes 99 cents. Yeah. Late 80s, somewhere early 90s, I don't know. But anyway, most unchurched people have a spiritual view of life. They are conscious of a higher power. Many of these people meditate on a regular basis, pray. So when are we going to tell these people about Christ, since they have a spiritual interest in things? There are a lot of unchurched people who live next door to us, who work at the next desk from us, or in a classroom with us. And they often wonder why we are so hesitant to talk to them about the most important things in their lives. If we were to catalog these unchurched people according to their listen ability, what will we find? Some of them are hostile. 1 out of 20, which is a very small portion of the unchurched population. They are hostile because maybe they had a bad experience with church. So should we let our one encounter with these hostile people cause us to retreat into a shell of silence about our faith? Number two, 2 out of these 20 people are unwilling. They are resistant to religion. How many times have you ever heard people say, my mom and dad taught me there's two things you don't talk about in life, religion and politics. Right. So we can't expect them to jump into everything we say about our faith. But should we let our encounter with these unwilling people leave us feeling empty and discouraged about sharing our faith? Number three, 3 out of these 20 people are indifferent. To them, religion is a non-issue. They're not either interested or offended when someone talks to them about religion. And while most of these people are confused about religious matters, should we write them off as poor candidates for conversion? Number four, 8 of these 20 people are seekers. These people tend to be young, 18 to 36. Most of them are women, 62% of them. They have a keen sense that something is missing in their lives. Most went to church when they were children and have warm memories of going to church as a child. And if they, and when asked if they would attend church with us, most of them would respond enthusiastically, of course. Problem, when are we going to go to these 60 million unchurched Americans who are waiting for us to open our mouth and our hearts and invite